This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 116. It's not going to be too long before we hit 120 here. And it's not really that cool out, but I'm going to go ahead and turn the air conditioning on. And I think I'm already past episode 116 of Good Morning Clara. I've been recording little just quick things in the morning to tell Clara about my granddaughter, about growing up in the Philippines and things that are going on in her life and all that kind of stuff. Well, I've been doing it since January. It was January or February when I started. Maybe February. And so it's been 4 or 5 months. Well, at 30 days a month, you know, approximate, you chew through them pretty fast. So I don't even bother to try to number those. It's just good morning, Clara, for today, June the 16th. Had family reunion last weekend. Went down to Tulsa. That was cool. It was on my wife's side of the family, but I get along with everybody down there, and so it was nice. You know, I'd never seen me without long hair before, I don't think. And so walked in, everybody was going, "What happened to your hair?" And of course, I'm to the point now where it's just fuzzy now, because it's, what, maybe 3/4 of an inch out now, maybe 1/2 to 3/4 of an inch. And so, of course, you get the inevitable comments about being a chia pet and all those kind of things. But it was a good retreat. I actually lost weight. I lost weight at a family retreat because I just decided absolutely I was not going to eat some of that stuff. So, plus, there were always little last minute things. So I was running around doing things to kind of help out a little bit. I missed a couple of meals, so that seemed to help. The other thing that we did, since we were going down through Tulsa, I actually rode down with my son-in-law and daughter and granddaughter. That was fun. And then drove back up with my wife, and both going down and coming back, we swung through Joplin, Missouri, which of course was the site of that massive, massive tornado. Went through there. They said it was 200 miles an hour now, they're thinking, and it was a mile wide, and it was on the ground for 16 miles. It's just unbelievable. And my daughter was saying that she had heard that they thought it was a multiple vortex inside that tornado as well. So it was, and my son-in-law had taken his youth group down there one day during youth retreat over Memorial Day weekend. Excuse me. And so he had seen it, so he kind of knew where to go. And so on our way down there, he kind of gave me the tour and Lizzie the tour. And then on the way back, I gave my wife the tour. It's settled down enough that National Guard aren't around everywhere anymore, and there is some reconstruction going on. They are still cleaning up, but wow, this thing, you know, it's huge, it's fast, it sets down and just runs right into, there's two big hospitals down there, and runs right into one of them. And just blows out everything in this hospital. My son-in-law was saying that there were a couple of security guards on doors that had the magnetic locks, and they were physically holding the doors, trying to keep them shut. And from what he had heard, the tornado actually whipped the doors open. One guard flew off. The other one was hanging on for dear life, managed to not blow away by wrapping his arm around something. But there was another report of a young man who was riding with his dad in, I think they said a Hummer, and the thing just sucked him right out of the sunroof. And when you see it, when you really, there's a lot of devastation, but then when you stop yourself and say, okay, this big flat area that just is rubble, this used to be wall-to-wall subdivision with houses, and it's just flattened. It's really incredible. It's an incredible thing to see. So that was very interesting. I won't say it was enjoyable. It was very, very interesting. It's been a good week at work. I've been working on an addendum to a project plan, and then the programmer I was working with to do a big web deployment project, he actually had, his wife had her baby, and so he's off with her, and that meant it fell to me to do the rollout, so I'm actually in the process of doing the deploys. I'll probably go in tomorrow for a little bit, simply because I'm not quite done, and I got towards the end of the day, and I just didn't want to, you know, blow everything out and release everything without stepping it through. I did make one small error today. There's one file that is like the crucial hinge pin file, and as I was very carefully deploying that, and I missed one line in that file, which meant that as people were trying to check out, we were actually routing them over to the dev side so they couldn't actually place their order. And I deployed the file, and I was checking everything, and I hit that spot, and I went, oh, rats! So then it was like, why is it doing that? And Jesus kind of whispered to me where it was. I went and fixed it. Whew. But I checked all the logs, because we track everybody as they're going through the site. And checked all the logs, and no one had hit those screens at that point. So there were people that had hit the screens before that, and soon after it. But thank God! Just in that little window, it was okay. Of course, you know, even if they had gone through it, I would have had contact information for them, and so customer support would have just gotten in touch with them and said, sorry, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's just nice to know that it didn't actually hurt anything. I do have several topics that I'm ramping up for, but I said I would talk about this week. And then I actually have two more topics for next week and the next week that sort of surround this same area, sort of, kind of, about self and true self and exploring yourself and coming to know yourself and blah, blah, blah. But we'll see how those go. I may need a little extra preparation time, so I might just find something else to talk about next week. This last week, I had read an article called In Search of the True Self. And I was pretty pleased as I was reading this article to see how balanced it was. The author actually ended up someplace where I didn't think he was going, but I thought he had an interesting point that he was making. I don't know that it was that interesting after I got done with the article, but he raises some interesting questions, and so I've been chatting about it with my buddies. By the way, my one friend, Charles McDonald, who had made it to the finals there at for the Folgers Jingle Contest, he competed today. He did not win, but I told him before I went, I said, look, buddy, you are already a winner. They're giving you money. They're flying you to New York. He did say that the woman who won was really good, and he said on his Facebook that I didn't win, but so-and-so won, and my hat's off to her because she was just excellent. So that's okay. He, you know, obviously achieved a lot by simply even getting out there, and so that's cool. So In Search of the True Self. This was an article that was written by Joshua Nobe, and he starts out talking about Mark Pierpont, and he says how Mark Pierpont used to be an important figure in evangelical Christian efforts to help cure gay people, because he started out just printing up tracts and handing them out in gay bars, but his ministry grew over time, and eventually he was traveling the world speaking to crowds that sometimes numbered in the thousands. There was just one problem. Mark Pierpont himself was gay. He continued to feel sexual desires towards other men and was constantly engaged in an effort to suppress them. And apparently there's a documentary film out now on him, and the film is called Protagonist. And in it, the article says that Pierrepont movingly describes his inner conflict, saying that he sometimes felt an almost physical revulsion at his own desires and would think, good, I hate this, I hate sin, just like God hates sin. And the author goes on to say, faced with a case like this, our typical glib advice is to just look deep within yourself and be true to yourself. And he said, you find this advice all through history and all through literature. To thine own self be true, this above all else, to the siderata, this above all else, to thine own self be true. You do hear this a lot. If a man does not keep pace with the companions, perhaps it is because he hears a different drummer. Let him step to the music he hears, however measured and far away. You know, there's all this little philosophy stuff that you hear. He said, where the problem comes is in defining what do you mean by true self, because there's actually two completely different philosophies about what is true self. He said, you're going to talk to some people who are going to say, well, deep down inside, he's always wanted to be with another man, so that's who he is, and he should just go do that. And then you're going to talk to some other people, and they're going to say, well, fundamentally, Pierrepont is a Christian who is struggling to pursue a Christian life, but he has these desires, and it makes it more difficult for him to live by his own values. You know, and if he ever gives in and chooses to sleep with another man, then he will be betraying the person that he really is. And so you've got this two fundamentally different approaches. Because, as the author of the article says, if you look to the philosophical tradition, there's a fairly straightforward answer to the question. And the answer that is endorsed by numerous different philosophers is that the most distinctive and essential characteristic of a human being is the capacity for rational reflection. It is the capacity to look within yourself and, despite all your urges and whims and fleeting emotions, to say, that's not what I'm going to do. And the example he gives is the heroin addict, someone who might be craving that next fix, but if she gives into that craving, it would be absurd to say that she's then being her true self or expressing the person that she really is. However, what's interesting is the guy who wrote this article says that when he goes outside the philosophical world into those who are not well-versed in philosophy, and he poses the same thing, he said many of them are immediately drawn to the opposite view. And they suggest that the true self lies precisely in our suppressed urges and unacknowledged emotions, while our ability to reflect is just a hindrance that gets in the way of our true self. In other words, they say the only time you're your true self is when you are drunk or overcome by passion, and then we get to see who you are. And you find this in a lot of popular cultures. Dance like no one is watching. Before this is all said and done, we'll come back to this. There is a component to that which is true, because we'll get to that in a minute. Anyways, so up to this point in the article, I was like, well, okay, this is pretty interesting. Let's see how he's going to resolve this. And then it kind of took a left turn, because Then he said, well, in my view, neither of these two perspectives fully captures the concept of true self. The trouble is that both of them assume that the true self can be identified in some sort of straightforward way with one particular part of a person's psychology. And instead, he says, but it seems that the matter is more complex. People's ordinary understanding of true self appears to involve some kind of value judgment, a judgment about what sorts of lives are really worth living. So people tend to arrive at judgments, at different judgments regarding the nature of Pierpont's self, depending on whether they think that a homosexual lifestyle is a valuable one. And so then he goes on and he talks about they did a survey, got a bunch of people, did a survey, kind of figured out whether they were conservatives or liberals, and then gave them the survey and couched the questions in such a way that the person's views, whether they were a conservative or liberal, could be reflected in their understanding of what the true self was. And of course, he showed that if you're a conservative, you're more likely to think that you gotta suppress all those urges, and if you're more liberal, you're more likely to think that you should just let those all go, and that's your true self. And as I was reading through this, I thought, yeah, I mean, part of the problem here is we once again are looking for this unified, singular self. This idea that I am one. And if I could just figure out who I am, then I would know what to pursue and what to be true to. And I think the other piece of this is that in determining what to pursue, it's really important to understand what this life truly is. Because what you are going to pursue is entirely dependent on what you believe this life is. If you believe that this life is all there is, that when you die, everything goes black and it's all over. If you believe that, then you are going to pursue your true self, quote unquote, in a different way than if you believe this life really amounts to a game. I mean, and not a game in a bad sense, but there is a purpose to this life, and that there is a process to this life, and it is not the end-all be-all. It is simply a mechanism to teach us certain things about true existence. So let's assume for a moment that we believe the latter is true. Because everything I'm about to say makes less of an impact if you believe that this life is all we have and everything shuts down when we die and it's all over. Although there's still applications. So let's assume for existence there's more than just this life, that this life is designed, that we are here for a purpose. That's the first thing. And then the second thing, that we are not one. That when we speak of the concept of true self, it's really more a concept of true selves. That we are each a collection. I was reading a book that may come up in future weeks. I was hoping it was on the Kindle, and it's not! I was hoping it was on the Kindle because I really wanted to read it. And there was a quote in there from a famous writer, Henry David Thoreau, not sure, where he said, I am a multitude. And I think that's a far better understanding than trying to seek one true self. that there are many, many things that are true about me. And I have often said to people, if it wasn't for Jesus and for my understanding of myself and for his kindness in my life, I'm getting my mail, do not even want to contemplate where I would be. Because I can guarantee you it would not be good. Because I have looked down inside myself and I have seen what's down there. There's some really cool stuff, but I also recognize that I am a multitude and there's some not good stuff either. So in pursuing this true self, in this idea that we are a multitude, then the question is, what do we do? Well, if we recognize that we are a multitude, if we recognize that we are composed of flesh and of spirit, we recognize that all of that is going to be all tangled up. I'm backing into my garage, so I will start talking louder. It's going to be all tangled up. And no matter what good things there may be within us, in our spirit, and the multitude of responses that we could have, the flesh is going to try to tangle that up and bind us up. So, for instance, there's no question that all of us are born with different proclivities, different likes, different dislikes. I mean, this is just a part of being human. That all these wonderful genes get together and they do lots and lots of different things. Without going into a whole lot of detail, the fact of the matter is that I myself have certain interesting proclivities. And, you know, that's just kind of life in the big city. Now, the question is then, does that mean that that's my true self? Well, it is a part of me. There's no question it's a part of me. The only real question is, do those things create an environment of success for me or an environment of failure? And that which pushes me towards those things, is it pushing me towards them because it's looking for my success or looking for my failure? And many of those things, I've looked at them and said, yeah, I could do that, but I just see as I look around that that just sort of takes a person down a path and causes more and more isolation in their life. And isolation is one of those indicators that it's flesh. On the other hand, there's a whole host of other things that people would normally say, oh, I could never do that. When I look at them, I can realize that my flesh is trying to restrain me from those things, when in fact, doing those things would create an environment of success for me. So, for instance, when I was music minister at a local church here in Springfield, Missouri, we used to sing a song. And just before the chorus, the verse would say, it makes me want to shout. And then the chorus went, hallelujah, thank you, Jesus, Lord, you're worthy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And first, one of the first times I did it, I mentioned to the congregation, you know, I said, honestly, when I sing, it makes me want to shout, and then I don't shout, then why am I singing those words? I said, so I don't know about you, but when we get to the chorus on this, I'm going to shout. I'm just warning you right now. And if you want to join me, that's fine. And so, every time we sang that song in the 15 months I led worship, I would stand up on stage and holler, shout, holler. And no one else in the congregation would do it. Now, my flesh just would be telling me, oh, well, no one else, you're just making a fool of yourself. You need to stop this. What is the point of this? But me going out and doing those things, dancing as if no one is watching, actually gave me a sense of freedom. And I was always happy that I did it after I did it. So I don't think it's as easy as just saying, well, don't follow your urges and don't follow your emotions, because some of your urges and some of your emotions, there's absolutely nothing wrong with them. You know, little happy dance every once in a while does the body good. If you have something cool that happens, a little happy dance, it's fine. Nothing wrong with that. And I think the people who are on the side of, well, the only time you're your true self is that when you're just drunk or overcome with passion. Now, because they feel that pressure of the flesh criticizing them. Oh, you can't do this. You can't do that. And so since they feel that pressure, then they become convinced that everything that they want to do would be better if they just let go and let fly and do whatever came into their head. Though what they don't realize is not only is the flesh pushing down and pressuring them not to do the urges and fun and spontaneous stuff that's good for them, but it's also at the same time inspiring urges and emotions and spontaneous behavior that's not good for them. Because it does that. It works both sides of the fence at the same time just to try to keep us confused. And all it comes down to for us then is we just need to kind of get quiet and say, okay, does this create an environment of success or does it not? And I'm running out of time, so I have to wrap this up. But how you make those decisions, I talk about in Still Whispers, which is still available, by the way, for free on my website. And I will be taking that down soon since there's a Kindle version and an iBooks version soon to be available and a Nook version of all of them. And they're like $1.99. So, you know, I'm going to be taking those down soon. I talked about all those reasons in Still Whispers. But to circle back around then, to come back to the original Mark Pierpont issue, I was talking to a buddy about this, and he said that there was somebody who had come several times to the church that was similar to this, who would is still a very flamboyant person, which I don't think that makes you automatically gay, and loving color and loving style, I don't think it makes you automatically gay. I think we have created these boxes that lead people to think that, oh, I must be gay because I'm flamboyant and I love style, but never mind. That's a whole other discussion. But this man who had come to speak said, you know, I'm still attracted to men. And I don't know why anybody would choose this. Well, it's absolutely true, I think, that in some cases, the genetics gets together and it's like, well, hey, I happen to think that really tall, muscular guy over there is awfully good looking. And I can see how someone would be attracted to that guy over there. however, just because someone is attracted to men, or just because someone is attracted to women, or just because someone is attracted to cows, doesn't necessarily mean that it creates an environment of success by following through with that. And in fact, there are things that can be learned, I'm convinced, no other way than being in a long-term committed relationship with a member of the opposite sex. There are things you cannot learn any other way. And so, because of that, I choose to be married. I choose to be faithful because that then generates an environment of success for me. Anyways, lots more that could be said on that, but like I said, this is long and I need to go ahead and close it up. And then we'll talk some more next week. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.